break. It's a mini episode.
Hello and welcome to another mini-sode of You Gotta Check This Out with Mike and Dre. I'm the Mike, and this week we bring you all the times Karen actually does on her own podcast. But before that, we assemble a team of superpowers to rival the ones in the powers fantasy. Then, we travel back in time to reveal our own book nerd origin stories. Enjoy all that and the usual mix of outtakes from the main episode. See you on the other side.
Can I immediately counter and say it was so much more fun to not do much of the context and just hop straight into the, like, the book is gorgeous and it's two people eating pizza, and I text you about this, Mike. It's two nerds having a superhero debate, and like midway through, you're like, oh, they're both superheroes. And then I was, yeah. And then Karen, I'm going to steal from Mike immediately. I stole the ball. I mind melded immediately. Ah! Karen, I got to throw you a game immediately that Mike and I were playing. In this book, our heroes discuss serious ramifications, stopping global nuclear wars, etc. And I was like, if me and Mike were two supers, we'd be like arguing, and Mike could be saying the one you said, Mike. So this is you. This was not mine. Mike was like, he would be giving everybody in the world jaunty hats, each jauntier than the last. And I was like, oh, I would just be on board. I would immediately be like, Mike, we got it. I'm like, F this superpower, us fighting, don't destroy each other, Xavier, Magneto. We got to discuss this jaunty hat plan. What are we going to do, Mike?
Cool. I was going to say, your power just like worked well with it. That's why we met each other in this universe, because you're the Macadrena and you can make people dance wherever you go. So it's like jaunty hands dancing everywhere. I mean, we're just spreading joy.
So Karen, if you were to have an arbitrary Omega level, but albeit useless superpower, what would you put? If we're adding you, we're going to have three guests, Mike. That'll put five of us. So, Karen, if you're putting yourself in the super, we got the Macadrena, jaunty hat Mike, Karen.
I don't know what my name would be, but my superpower would be like Harry Potter plates, where like you could just magically have whatever you want. So like when you finish a cannoli and you want another one, it would just magically show up on your plate.
That is so much better than I thought, because I thought you're going to be like, you could get commemorative Harry Potter plates. I'm like, first of all, that's a little problematic. And then also, no, that's genius. Yeah, like the infinite plate.
Just
and
the infinite plate. Yep. So like whatever you want, it shows up and that's what you do. Mine would not subjugate goblins. It would not be like, it's straight up magic. It comes from nowhere, not goblins or what is Dobby? House elves. No house elves. Working on in the kitchen. This is just straight up a plate that gives you whatever food you want when you want it. I guess maybe if I could make the plates, that way I could hand the plates out to people. I feel like that would be a better superpower, but not really like useless. Like that seems like a pretty decent superpower to go to like a poor country and be like, here, have a plate that feeds you forever. Congratulations.
Yeah, my question would be, it would be any plate you could grab as a part of your power, or is there like one specific plate that you have?
That is an excellent question. I think I can manifest the plates and then give them to people.
I like that. It's like the old Looney Tunes bag of tricks.
Take the plates. Can you take the plates away too, though?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I have all total control over the plates. I do not control what gets put on the plates. That's whatever. I hand the plate to the person and then they get control over what the plate serves them up. But yeah, if I don't like what the plate is serving people up, I can be like, no more plates.
And Mike,
for you.
There's got to be a pun name in there with like plate or like dishware or china or something there. I'm racking my brain.
The Toastmaster, the Plentifier, I don't know.
Plentifier is pretty good.
Only because it hasn't been used much before. The Plentifier.
Jaunty Hat Mike, Macadrena, and the Plentifier. Mike, we're making our own.
Our own Watchmen here. All that stuff in the background, I don't think was in the script as much. You'll see a lot that Casper, as the illustrator, brings to it is he made a lot of the choices, especially like with design, because the third character we meet, Heavy, he didn't have, you know, he always has that spliff kind of hanging out in front of him. That was Casper's choice to say like, all right, this guy is going to look like the dude if the dude was really into Tai Chi and like got really physical, but he's still the dude underneath it. How do we show his powers of like controlling gravity all the time and show that he's just like an aging hippie? It's like a nice little touch that's in there. I think the best summation of the Power Fanny, what it's about.
The Power Fanny, that is a much different book,
Power
Mike.
I swallowed the fatatas, the last bit of the fantasy. Yeah, you better get your kid out of the room. Who knows what's going to come out of this mouth? No.
I'm sorry, we're staying here.
The Fantasy.
You said, instead of saying the power fantasy, you said the power fanny, and then in response to being told that you said that happens when you swallow the tata.
Oh, yeah, it's called leaning into it when it happens.
Yeah, Mike does lean into that. Anyway. The genius people show their hand. There is literally a timeline, and we've seen many of these things, but we start at 1945, we get to 1989, which is the first summer.
Okay,
which is,
Dre, I got to interrupt. Have you ever heard me say the name Jonathan Hickman before?
I have seen him in your notes, yeah.
Yes, he is my favorite writer of all time, and this is a trick that Kieran Gillen has said, like, yeah, I took this from Hickman. And Hickman has said that this is one of the best other uses of what he does. This is showing your hand. This is saying, like, I have this story planned out. You are in good hands. Here's what happened before in the past. Here's what happened in the future, some of which you've known because we've already been jumping between times. But this tells you that, like, oh, there's a plan behind all of this. And you can keep coming back to this timeline as we go through the rest of the story and match up to what happens.
And I mean, I just want to stress, so like, this ceases to be spoilers, because 1953, his family dead in a car crash, Etienne Lux awakes from a coma, powers active, see chapter 12.
Which hasn't been written yet. When you got the comic, you were only on chapter 3. You're like, but I can't. And it just creates more anticipation for getting to chapter 12.
We've got the signal arrives in 1978, which is extraterrestrial. That's chapter 10. We have the Major, a super we haven't even met yet, is killed in chapter 5. And by the way, I'm not spoiling. I'm literally reading off the timeline you would have.
No, there's something brilliant about this. And that if you've ever heard about what a good writer does to story, is that they make it not that it's like surprises you at the end or like, oh, I never could have seen that coming. It's like the whole culmination of the story makes it inevitable that's what was supposed to happen. And you knew it was coming, but you didn't realize at the moment it was. And what this graphic is doing for that thought is that it's planting direct seeds in your mind. You're like, this is going to happen here, but how does that connect? How do we get to it? I know it's going to happen. I want this writer to show me how we get there.
I liked it. The impatient part of me is very mad about it. But just sitting here hearing you talk, I'm doing another one in the middle. The Secret Life of Addie LaRue is by V.E. Schwab, I think. And some people don't like it, but like the way you were talking, I was like, oh, that's The Secret Life of Addie LaRue. Like, you knew what was going to happen. And I still was in tears by the end of that book. Like, just because you know what's going to happen, it's not about the destination. It's about the journey along the way, if it's done well. And I think this will be done well. But the timeline made me mad because I can't read it all and I can't jump forward and I am impatient. And I was going to say,
I couldn't. When I was reading this, I couldn't jump forward and you can.
No, I can't do all of
it. It is still on hiatus, you liar, Mike.
All of the stuff in this timeline is in the first three volumes, which have already been released. Okay.
One of the things, and I told you this when I read this, is that I don't like, generally, books that jump. I like my stories to be straightforward. I can deal with, like, if you jump timelines or if you jump between people, as long as you don't have it, like, Game of Thrones is too many stupid threads to keep up with. I cannot deal with that. And this does both, so I'm not happy about it. But I think it's okay because it's a graphic novel, so there's a certain amount of cognitive load that is, like, off, like, it's on the page, it's there. I don't have to picture it myself in my head. Whereas, like, Game of Thrones, I had to keep it all straight. So in that respect, the timeline was helpful because I don't have to, like, keep it all straight in my head. I know I can just come back and look at it. But it does piss me off because, like, I don't have the volumes. I have the issues, but then I have to go look through the issues, and I'll just wait.
By the way, when Mike was like, oh, the best way to read it is an issue at a time, and you get to sit and ruminate, I was like, Karen, no. You and me agree. Like, what are you talking about? I texted Mike immediately after I got through volume 3 and was like, you monster, it's on hold?
I was like, what? I thought it was good.
Like, that's a complete story. There's just another one coming.
But by the way, Mike, I do got to read 1989, the last thing on this timeline, and then I'll make a note. So 1989.
That's the one that makes me mad. That's the maddest one. I just was like, I don't want to read any of the rest of this. I just want to skip
When I saw this, I was like, what? And it says, the queen arrives from outside existence, precipitating the second summer of love. See chapter 7. That's 4 chapters in the future outside of the book you're holding right now, by the way. What seems to be a true new age ends with her attempt to destroy reality. The dissension of Eliza Hellbound. See chapter 8. We have met Eliza, but we didn't know anything about her yet. The Pyramid in Hell. See chapter 10. All the Western Eurasian landmasses up to and including Moscow is destroyed, precipitating the collapse of the Soviet Union. And what I also want to point out, Mike, as an infographic, is we have this timeline, and it's colored, though. So it starts black, it goes green in the 60s, it gets to yellow, it gets to red in 1989. But what I should stress, and this, I think this is very intentional infographics, it keeps going, and we see like a power red button at the very bottom. Mm-hmm. And this is just dropped in the middle and is genius.
Yep. I mean, it goes, ties into the whole, the iconography of using the power button everywhere for the power fantasy, like turning it off. It's a glowing button. Do you ever push the button? What would happen if someone does push the button? There's a lot of stuff that's just not written in the comic. That's just all around the images that he
absolutely
uses.
There's an episode of Ask Hank Anything where he interviews Shyvan Thompson from Dropout, and they talk at one point in time, they're talking about poetry, but they kind of broaden it, and she says that for her, like, analyzing a thing makes it more interesting, and Hank is like, no, that ruins it for me. And it just made me think of you and I, Mike, because I'm like, I think you love analyzing, and the analyzing stuff ruins it for me. It's like,
how
I just
can you
like,
tell? It's not like I write crazy notes about stuff.
And this gets, and I get to be such a boring rube where I point out, like, in Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman, he has this debate and atomic age stuff. So, like, I love it. This debate's been around forever. And Mike, on this timeline, I got to do two things. I can't read it all, of course, because it is a lot. Check out the book, people. If you have not, by this, you're fools. Okay. Anyway, but I'm
going to check it out.
You got to check this out.
Okay. I'm thinking of a theme song for a thing that hasn't happened, Mike. We're going to have to make a timeline and you got to check this out after this. Okay. I want to stay here briefly, though, because what I will say is Mike sent me volume 1. And I am really happy, Mike, because you had been like, we'll do a palate cleanser. We'll do volume 1. We spent so much time on Babylon 5, which was a blast and a joy, that in that time, volume 2 and volume 3 got released, and you sent those both along to me, and I just went on a road trip, and I had those in front of me, and I was telling you, like, I was laughing behind the scenes stuff, people. Mike does copious notes that are wonderful, and in the notes, he kept having these Etienne-like warnings, like, Dre, do not go any further here. Like, you need to stop, Dre, and you need to read the books first. And I talked to Mike, I was like, I love that you don't realize that if you put these three books in front of me and I start reading them, I am just going to consume them all. Like, one of my origin stories, when I was a kid, I always had a book with me. And like, my parents got mad. I would read a book.
All three of us are in that boat, yes, very much.
Okay, now let's start grading each other. Let's start comparing.
Should I make Dre like a bookmark purse? It'll be a bookmark bag.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Dre would love that.
I feel like
you
Dre
should
would
definitely
appreciate
get that in the
works.
That is so cool. And but okay, so let's compare like origin stories. Because remember, we got our own thing going. The Macadrena, Jaunty Hat Mike,
and the Plentifier.
The Plentifier are origin stories. I would have like books in the dugout at Little League, and I would like have them in the car. Yeah. And you know, the little light on the thing? Like, I would open the glove box to get the light to read them. My dad's like,
I lost a friend on a camping trip I went to visit his grandma's house in the Upper Peninsula, and his grandma was complaining about me because I wouldn't stop reading movie novelizations. This is like when I was like 11 or 12.
Wait, which one? We got any good ones? Do you remember any of them?
I remember Gremlins 2. I remember the novelization of License to Drive. That movie.
The Corey Feldman.
The Corey's movie. I read that one so many times. I loved the License to Drive novelization. What was the John Goodman? Arachnophobia. That was another one of my favorites. I loved the novel. Well, this is another big thing about me. Like, I was not allowed to watch anything other than G and maybe a PG movie until I was like 16. So like I would have to like go to my friend's house. I would never get to like watch R-rated or PG-13 movies around my parents at all. It's like strictly for Bowden. But the novelizations are always there for young Mike.
In some ways, those are worse because I've read books and they get...
Oh, they're so much worse.
Yeah.
But for your imagination, those things are so much fun when you can only like see previews of movies and you can only see like posters when you bike by movie theaters that you really can't go in because you know your parents will figure out somehow. I was a little paranoid as a kid. But yeah, you just read the novelizations and fill in the rest of the stories with your mind.
You may have taken it to 11 there, Mike. I will say I did when I was work at Target would just read books off the rack. I did read the novelization of the Eric Bana Hulk movie.
Ooh,
it's not good. Okay, Karen, I'll let you get last word on the book origin stories.
In middle school, like it was fifth and sixth grade, I had one friend that I ate lunch with, and I would read a book throughout lunch. So I don't know why she saved my friend. And then she would hold my arm and walk me through the hallways to get back to classroom so I could keep reading on the way to the classroom.
That is an amazing... Are you still friends with him? That is an amazing friend.
No, I'm not. But yeah, so that was that. And then...
I would have paid for that service, by the way. In high school, someone was like, you can hold my arm and I'll guide you to class so you can keep reading.
Keep reading this book. And then I worked at Walden Books and 100%. I think there's a statute of limitations, so I think I'm good. But like when you had the paperback books, you just had to tear the covers off and send those back to the publisher, and then the rest of them are supposed to go in the trash. I kept so many of those books. I did not trash them. I was so afraid that the police was going to come after me because I was a good kid and I didn't steal, that all of the books I stored under my bed. So I had a ton of books that I wanted to read that I stole from the bookstore. I tore the covers off, sent them back, but then I kept them and I would keep them under my bed. And then I don't think I even read all of them. I was so scared to read them, which is interesting because for Walden Books, you're actually allowed to like... Well, you were allowed to like take books home and read them. So they encouraged you to do that so that you could recommend books to the customers. But I still was like, no, I'm not throwing this out. This sounds interesting. I'm taking it home.
Yeah, whenever they're throwing out a book, and by the way, this exceeds expectations because in our back and forths with Mike, I was like, oh, we're going to talk about Dre's origin. And yeah, I'm coming in bronze in this contest, but we are all book nerds. That was amazing. Okay.
So one of your obsession is comic book origin stories. It's how I kind of first got podcasting with you.
Plant Mike payoff.
Plant payoff. I thought it was fuck around and find out.
Oh, plant, fuck around and find out? Yeah, that's one way to do it. And I've got to say, this has happened a couple of times. This happened the last time we podcast, or a bit ago, podcasting, Mike, realizing, yeah, so Judy Blume, Tales from Fourth Grade, nothing is Judy Blume. Huh. Yeah. I thought it was Beverly Cleary for some reason, because I'm a huge fan of Beverly. Okay.
I always say no because 100% I do the same thing.
Okay, you were saying, oh, I was like, oh no, did I step on a minefield?
No, I do the same thing. At the end, we read Tales of Fourth Grade Nothing, and that one just came out. And at the end, I was like, oh yeah, let's this other book, and I thought it was the dog from Tales of the Fourth Grade Nothing. It's not. It's Beverly Cleary. It's a completely different book.
Are you doing Strider? Like, oh, are you going to do Strider?
No, it was Ribsy.
Ribsy?
Yeah, Ribsy was the dog.
Yeah, but that's in Beverly Cleary.
There's another. Okay, so hold up. Hold up. All right, at any point, Beverly Cleary did. Okay, so Beverly Cleary did multiple dog books. You allowed to do that, child author?
He tapped a new vein.
What's this?
You got it going. Keep the money train rolling.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, the mice, right? The mice riding a motorcycle. I mean, that was just like printing money there. Not bad. I've never read. I read Strider and Dear Mr. Henshaw.
I read Dear Mr. Henshaw. I remember that one. I do not remember
Strider
at all.
Strider is the sequel where he gets a dog who's an Australian cattle dog, which is what we used to have. I've never read Ribsy. The U.S. government, of course, tries to Homelander. It's like, hey, use your powers.
Not the U.S. government. Brazilian government.
Oh, politics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. Felt very U.S. government. Thank you. That's okay. How many? Yeah. Thank you. By the way,
there's a lot of them.
I'm actually counting.
Editor me was like, I'm going to just cut this. But like, actually now editor me is like, by the way, Mike, we're going to have to do an actually count. So yes, thank you, Karen. So
actually. Yeah, so I need a soundbite for that. And yeah, there's the one girl who's there all the time who is just drawn in pure white, drawing your attention to her the whole time. She's not saying much, but Magus is talking like directly at her in several of these scenes.
He calls her out as Eliza. Third panel in.
And then we jump into the future, 1999, right? So I think that's the furthest we go in the book. So
Dre, the 1999 is still the past.
You got it. That's all six. All right. Everybody gets two points for that.
Actually, Dre didn't buzz in and say his name. Wait. Well, I don't know when this episode is going to come out, but if you have in any way, shape, or form a vote for the Emmys, you should vote for Game Changer and Vic for host and Sam for host. I don't know who's listening to this, but do it.
I thought you were talking to me. I'm like, I don't know what you think.
What are you doing? You got to go vote. Vote in the Emmys.
Go vote for the Emmys, Dre. What do you mean you
Karen,
don't have
I
that?
Don't know what Mike has told you about me, but I do not have the power.
Dre, she's talking to the listeners. It's not just the three of us.
What? Other people are here. It does say that voting ends September 5th through 6th. You have plenty of time. So Emmy voters, no excuse.
Thanks again for listening. Next week, we cover Volume 2 of The Power Fantasy with Atif Myers. And I'm really happy to have a place where I can tell people about these amazing books. Best yet, since we spent a year on Dre's first pick, he's giving me two seasons in a row. So I'm already cooking up a music season to fill in our genre's bingo card. So thanks for sticking around with us. And if comics aren't for you, just check in a few shows down the road and we'll have something new for you to check out. Cheers, all.